Let's go straight to bases.
What do you got there?
Well, I've got the. I know we're syncing up here, aren't we? Like twins.
I know. Yeah.
I've got the BB3. Is it BB3000? BB3000. I was inspired by Mr. Jonathan Marin, who is a fantastic bass player. You guys watching this, I'll be hearing Jonathan today. But I was inspired by Jonathan, who plays or has played a BB exclusively for years, right? And it was just outrageous. In fact, I'm going to play the clip that really inspired me to get. I've got a bunch of clips today that we're going to be sharing. I haven't got that one organized, but I'm going to get it anyway. And you're going to hear Jonathan absolutely kill it on the BB. But he inspired me to get this bass. And I know that he inspired a lot of other players as well to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To get the BB.
Same.
But we're not only going to be talking about BBs today. We're going to be talking about our favorite five 80s basses. Basses from the 1980s. Oh, I was a poet and I didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and we're kicking it off with the BB. And just to put it out there, this might not be the definitive list of the best bass of the 1980s. But these are the ones that we own. So they're our favorite bass of the 1980s.
That's really true. That is really true. And I think I have a type. Like as I was pulling together some examples that are just sitting over here, I've got them in arm's reach. Dude, I'm prepared. I'm prepared today. I was thinking like, oh, I definitely have, like, I don't have any color. It's so interesting. All my basses from the 80s are either black, white, or natural. And I was like, why don't I have any pink basses or like, you know, or like teal basses? But I think when the chips are down, I go for that, like, I love the 80s sound and aesthetic, but I kind of like the more downplayed, like, color thing from then or something.
Did Doug Kagan have, like, what's the, is it a P-Bass special?
Yeah,
that's actually
called a jazz bass special. Okay, I do have that bass, but you decided you didn't want that bass in the shoot today.
Oh, well, you know, we only had five slots, dude. We only had five slots.
It's right over there.
We're going to sneak it in. But did Duff have a pink one? I'm sure we had a pink bass at some
point. I mean, could be. I remember him playing pretty much only the black and white ones. And he put stickers on them and stuff. And maybe he did have a pink one. Somebody might know. A GNR fan in the comments might be like, absolutely a pink one. And you might be right. But I think the jazz bass special that he was playing, that's like the PJ, I think that thing, he just had them in black and white. But
maybe I'm just smiling because I was thinking about my youth. And it was colorful. There was, you know, when I was a Guns N' Roses fan, I was having a bit of a colorful time. You know, it was a time of experimentation. So maybe it was white and I was just seeing pink. Who knows? But maybe that was it.
Right.
But should we jump into a few clips of the BB?
Hey, before we do you just want to go through a couple of differences of this? I do. I'm asking you a leading question. I mean, Scott's got the legit, like, 80s BB3000. Does yours just say BB3000? That's it?
Yeah, BB3000.
Okay.
I think that people have been sleeping on these for... Well, I still think people are sleeping on them. I will say that the prices have gone up, though.
They sure have, yes. Yeah. And I was able to find this one, which is actually called a BB3000A. And if you're watching the pod on YouTube, which we would highly encourage you to do, my pickups are slightly different. This is an active model. So it's still neck through, right? But it's a little later. It's got a battery in it. Scott's is passive. Scott's has volume, tone, and a pickup switch, where mine has volume, blend between the pickups, and then active bass and treble. And you have flats on yours, Scott, right?
Flats on this, yeah. Flats. What have you got on yours?
I've got tapes on mine. I see what you were doing. You were using the time wisely. Oh.
I was just pressing record on. I was like, oh no. Somebody left me in charge of the tech and I forgot to press record on Zoom.
Well done. Well done. I should have reminded you. You got it, man. We're all set. So two different models, or like mine is a little later. I think late 80s. Scott's, do you know what year yours is?
I'm not sure, man. Yours is active, isn't it, though?
Yeah, it's active. It's called a 3000A. You can see here on the end. I think that's correct. Yeah, BB3000A. And, you know, I've got tapes on mine, so it's got... It's got a really smooth sound.
If somebody asked you what the kind of essence of the BB sound is, what would you say?
I would say I almost never use it as a PJ, right? It's like blended in the center, like a PJ, it sounds like this. And you know, we've talked about this, like the PJ sound on most PJs, I don't love. But when I blend almost all the way to the P pickup, it sounds a little more like a mid-scooped P bass. It kind of does a thing where it, like, at least this one, kind of gets rid of some of this quality about P basses that I don't totally love. Like, it kind of seems like it widens the bottom and the top. But does yours do that, or is yours more like mid-forward?
It's slightly, let me, so what, this is...
How would you describe it?
I'm going to play a clip of Jonathan Marin playing it.
Yeah.
And then, actually, let me do that now, because it was this clip that really inspired me to get the BB in the first place. I heard this clip and I was just like, oh my Lord, that might be the greatest bass sound. I'm not even kidding you. I was like, this might be the greatest bass sound I've ever heard. And if I can only have that bass tone, I can die happy.
Yeah.
Oh.
So right, where he's got that.
It's got a bit, you know, like it's got a little bit of a sound to it when Jonathan plays it there. Let me play this one. And this is wide open as well. Something to point out, Jonathan on that clip was wearing, he was wearing, I'm not going to mention what he was wearing. He was just wearing normal stuff, but he was on his bass, he had flat wounds on and he's just playing it with the P pickup. So he doesn't
was that flats?
It's flats, yeah.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. And he's kind of digging in like that as well.
It is, but it doesn't sound like a P bass. That's the really interesting thing. It does not sound like a, it's the mid quality. Well, in terms of the sound, so that's the, again, the tone right up, volume right up, and only the P pickup on.
Yes.
It's just got a different mid quality to it. So it does sound different. I don't know whether one's wired in series, one's wired in parallel. If you guys are watching this and you know the answer, please, you know, comment below and let us know. But what I will say is it's got a neck through. So it's a neck through bait. It's made out of different materials, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's a neck through and it's got a Mikasa ebony board. But I've played P basses from Moulon, for instance, that use Mikasa ebony boards. They don't sound like that.
Right.
They just don't sound like that. So there's something, I don't know, sorcery.
Well, and the coils are wound the opposite of a typical P. I think, I'm pretty sure. I mean, we get this, I feel like we get this wrong and this is forever. But someone did tell me, and you let me know in the comments if you confirm it or deny it.
Oh, they will. I'm hoping you get it wrong.
Yes. That a typical P pickup, right, is run in series. Each coil is run into each other. It bucks the hum. It increases the volume. The mid-range comes up. It kind of takes it to this zone. Right? Right? It's sort of like covers the treble a bit, brings that mid-range up. That's series, I believe. And then these basses, or your passive bass, those coils are run in parallel. So it has a little bit more, it's not quite as dark and barky as a typical P bass would be. I think that's the reason. I think that's what's up. And I will say this bass...
That doesn't sound the same.
I know. And this is an active one, right? And I have tapes on it. This one is like smoother sounding. It doesn't have that same mid-range.
That one is certain, like, barkier. Bark, it's a bark, isn't it?
Yes. Oh. Yes. How did you... What a great lick that was that you
I
just
have
played.
No idea.
It was so nice. Yeah.
Something like that. But it's your sound. It's got that beautiful, fat, active sound. Is that
it? Mine does have that thing where actually I don't want to bark it. Like, I just want to play like big.
Yeah.
those kind of sounds, which is what I love, but just a different vibe, you know.
Sounds beautiful. Let me play one just because I love Jonathan. I want to give Jonathan lots of love, right?
I see what's coming. Hey.
Again, Maxwell Marin on bass with the BB.
With the BB. And I believe he told me he was playing rounds on this.
Oh, interesting.
Like dead rounds. Oh, if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, Jonathan.
Jonathan, unfortunately, not in the video.
I was going to say, was that Marin on bass in the video? No, it was
not. No, it isn't. But hey, you know, like you guys might not know it, but you've also probably heard a bunch of BBs yourself. There's some great players that have also played BBs in the past, and we've got like a collection of to show you today. Let me just pull it up. Where are we? Here we go. So first, this might be my favorite, man.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
And Ian doesn't know what these are either. So check it out. Here's the first one.
Oh, dude, yes. Such a good bass line.
What a killer. This bit.
Yes, like the double line there.
Yeah.
You think Kevin Bacon did that flip right there? You think that's Kevin Bacon doing all those moves?
I think it is Kevin Bacon. Actually, I think Kevin Bacon's dancing. Maybe he's outshining the bass here.
I think maybe you're right. Although I think that some of that was a stunt double. But
let's have a look again. Let's have a look again.
Bacon, obviously. Bacon, yes, this is Bacon. But that
bass run.
I think this is not Kevin Bacon.
Whoa.
Yeah, man. Oh.
Look, I love Kevin Bacon, dude. I follow him on Instagram. He's got goats. Just leave him out of it. Leave
him out of it. You freaking love Kevin Bacon alone.
He plays guitar. He sings.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's awesome, right? It's an awesome bass line.
It's so good.
Does anybody know who played? Do you know who played it?
Of course I know who played bass on this. It's the great Nathan East. But sometimes I forget.
Absolutely.
Like, man, I have slept on Nathan East. I learned this tune for a thing I did. That thing you're talking about where he plays what is it? Then he plays. That thing?
Exactly, dude. Oh. Exactly. Do you want to watch it? So this is
you've got him here. Playing it. This is from a thing that you did.
I'm organized, dude. Yeah, this is from a video that we recorded with Nathan at his place. And he is actually playing, well, check it out. It's not this P bass right here. It's the BB. Check it.
Oh.
So this is the Yamaha BB3000.
Oh, yes.
From the early 80s. Yeah. And this is the Footloose bass, basically. So I'll never forget, we were on the road and we rehearsed that song almost every single day. But the good news is when we went to record it, it was just one take, and it was Song of the Year, Grammys. And the string spacing was a little tight for me.
Yeah,
and that's
was.
When we started working on the signature bass. But otherwise, lots of fun sessions with this bass.
Can you just listen to the bass in this man's voice?
I was just going to say that. He's kind of, there's like a sub octave on his voice.
So good, isn't it?
It's set. Yeah. Like it's way down. It's like sessions with this bass. It's like way down low. That's wild. Yeah. I mean, what a dude, you know, obviously Eric Clapton, Kenny Loggins, so many sessions, like just a monster. And that line is killing. I wonder if he wrote that line or if that line was written by a guitar player or I don't. Do you know? Did he write the bass line for Footloose?
I played it on my first pro gig. So my first pro gig was in a theater. And for one of the nights, we had to do this, you know, movies night. And, right. And that was one of the, that was one of the tunes. And I can remember just thinking, like, what is this? Like, you know,
yes.
And I was trying to read the thing as well. I'd never heard it. It was, you know, it was like just before my time, but it was just an absolute killer line. And once I got it down, I really, really enjoyed playing it. And what was really interesting is when I saw him playing it, I was like, oh, it was actually done on one of those five strings.
Yeah,
so it was a five string BB with that weird super tight string
spacing. Tight spacing, yes. Yeah, that BB 5000. And I think that was the, actually the first commercially made or like mass produced five. Which is wild.
Was it? That is
yes. I mean, I'm spitting facts like I know, but I remember when I did the Peter Gabriel video for So, that was mentioned because it wasn't just Tony Levin that played on that record. And now I'm, and now it's terrible because I'm forgetting the other guy that played on that record, which is awful. And I regret that I brought it up because I can't remember. God. But
well, sleep oh, easy God. Because we won't edit this out.
But play to five. I mean, Alan. Oh, Alan, could you see? Could Alan do a fact check for me?
Alan, can
who
you do a fact
bass
check
on So besides Tony Levin? And tell me later. Oh, God.
It's coming.
And then I'm
going
to go, coming. Of course. Right.
Hey. Oh, hang yeah. on. Let me just pull my cans out. Who was it? What do you who? Oh, what he's saying, what, he's, Alan's dodgy Yorkshire accent over there. He said, what do we want to know? So who played bass on, is it So?
So by Peter Gabriel. There's so two bass players. By
Peter Gabriel. There's two bass players. One
Tony
is
Tony Levin.
And the other is fill in the blank.
Sorry.
Hey, while Alan's getting this, let me share this because this this is the last of the BBs, okay? But I wanted to share it because it's just so classic. And we're going to get burned if we don't share this one.
Yes. Dude.
Yeah, Peter Hook.
Oh.
Classic sound. But check it out, right?
Oh, wow,
what's
cool.
different about his bass? Let me just see if I can rewind it a little bit.
Is his a newer one? No. It's a-
check. Look at the pickups.
Come on, scroll down, camera.
See?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's got the reverse P.
Oh, yes. And yours doesn't, correct?
No. And yours doesn't. Yeah,
right.
So it's the reverse P on that
Whoa.
One. Some of the BBs, I'm not sure what the rules and regs are around which BBs had the reverse and which didn't, but there were certain ones that did have reverse P pickups. And for me, if anybody's wondering, I'm not that into reverse P pickups. It just doesn't sound like a P bass, but there are individuals, you know, that love them. And to Peter Hook's sound, it's like he's just... When I listen to Pete Hook, he's not really going after a bass sound. It's like a completely different thing.
It's almost like a jangly guitar sound. And I was just going to say.
Exactly, yeah.
Like if you want to try to get that, it's pick. He's playing super hard. Right? And with chorus on it. And then that is so wild where he plays the B and then lets the G ring behind it.
Yeah.
And then A with an A. That's so cool to me. So cool.
Yeah. And if anybody's wondering and didn't know, that's Joy Division. The band Peter Hook was, you know, key part of was Joy Division.
Yeah, and then New Order. Yes.
From Manchester, I think. Is that correct?
Is that right?
I think they're from Manchester, yeah.
Don't you be asking me English trivia, bro.
I'm useless, man. I think they were from Manchester. I could be lying.
Guess what? Alan's role. So I'm sorry. Alan has a new role. Additional role.
Fact checking Alan.
Yeah.
Did you get it, Alan? Did you get it? It was what? Larry Klein.
Larry Klein, dude.
Larry
Thank
Klein.
You, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
Larry Klein. Larry Klein, I believe, played the first... five string, you know, Yamaha BB 5000 on that Peter Gabriel record. I believe that's true. And it sounds so cool. He does not get enough love. I couldn't even remember his name. Terrible. Tony Levin gets all the love. Yeah. He was a session bass player playing that five string. I believe he played on, Oh, never mind. Let's move on.
should we swap like, our bases? We've done. We've given the BB some love. What's the next? Should we do the
call it?
Do the Kubicki, dude. Should we do Kubicki.
Grab. Do you have a Kubicki in the house?
I don't have the Kubicki.
Yeah,
all I have
know.
Is the BB, and I got in. And I pulled up this BB, and Alan said, "Hey man, the BB's reflecting a little bit in the light." And I was like, "Dude, this is the only 80s bass I have in the room today. I have to use this bass."
Well, never fear, Scott Devine, because look at this. Look at this Testarossa looking madman right here. And I know where your Kubicki is. It is in Mr. good King. Hands with Mr. Simon King. King Barty, man.
Yeah,
I saw him playing it. He sounds so good on that thing, man. So cool. So I've got a Kubicki here. Look at this. You guys, this is a 1988 Kubicki X Factor, one of the probably strangest, but I think most elegant body designs of the 80s. You've got tuners down here, all this proprietary stuff, yeah. Right? This one is in black, but it's sort of greening out over the years. I love that they put the logo, the Factor name, on the body of the bass, because if I put this into shot, oh, It has a headstock, right? But it's not the typical headstock. You can see that the strings go in here, right? And then it has this really interesting situation here where, you know, when you play it normally, let me see if I can just play.
Oh my word, that sounds amazing.
It's cool, right?
Huge, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I got a bunch of bottom end on it. Let me put some treble on it too. This thing is like wide sounding, right?
Wide, yeah.
But so if I play an E, now check this out. I can lift this lever, right? Oh, and it drops it to D. Now all I do is I scooch the string out of the way. This drops into a slot, and now I've got a D. Then I can also fret a D sharp, and I have to fret an E. So you can play in drop D, but not have to change your octave positioning.
Yes. So that's the most important part, because I'm sure some people watching this are listening and thinking, well, what's wrong with you? You've got the old drop D, you know, tuner peg.
Hip shot, sure.
But all of your tuning actually changes on your E string, where this doesn't. This, the actual, like all of the notes stay in the same place, but the low E then goes to a low D. And it's actually something that's used on uprights. So you can get uprights with extender, like upright basses, with these extender keys attached to the top of the headstock. It's the same thing here. So it's, for me, much more usable than like a drop D. And just to say it, I absolutely love these basses. I love them. They're amazing.
They're so cool.
The pickups are awesome because they're contoured with the actual strings.
Yeah, the radius.
So I love that. The bridge is really amazing, the way it works. Like, they can be a little bit of a pain to restring, but they're amazing. The sound obviously is amazing. The neck has got to be one of the most rigid necks I've ever played in my life. So it's actually
Why is that?
It's because of the laminates, dude.
Yeah,
can
man.
Can you show the peeps the laminates on the neck?
Yeah, I don't have autofocus on this, but I'll try to just get it in shot to where, like, you can kind of see, you can almost see at the headstock here, all the striping in the neck. It's because there's a gazillion. I mean, I don't know how many pieces of wood, like 50 pieces of wood. I made that number up, whatever. But in the neck, right? And they're all going this way, right? So they're all, I don't know, vertical, you know, but they're length wise strips of wood that are all glued together to make this thing, you know, the way that it is. So yes, the neck is super rigid. And you know, it's funny. People talk about, well, you know, one piece of wood, less glue joints. Scott, I know, like, you know, F bass has talked about that. Yeah, and it's just so interesting
as well. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. We're like, oh, you know, it's better if you have less glue joints. It's just so interesting, right? There's so many ways to do it. This has like the most glue joints in the neck.
Yeah, that neck has definitely got the most glue joints. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. I guess it's a completely different approach, that, isn't it?
Yes.
The philosophy is different, but it's just such a great instrument. The first time I heard one of these being played was on, if you guys, who can remember Hot Licks? It used to be run by a guy called Arlen Roth, who was the guy that tutored Ralph Macchio when he was playing guitar on Crossroads. Can anybody remember Crossroads? Steve Vai,
of course.
Ralph Macchio, he did Karate Kid, but that wasn't the greatest film he did.
Crossroads is so great.
Oh, so good. Anyway, Ralph Macchio and Alan Roth, he actually taught Ralph Macchio guitar. And he had this company, which was basically kind of like SBL back in the day, but for all of the instruments. And it was called Hot Licks. They had yep. guitar players, bass players, drummers. And one of the bass players was Stu Hamm. And I didn't have enough money. This is serious. I didn't have enough money to buy any Hot Licks videos. So I just had the Hot Licks demo video that just showed you all. Yeah, it just showed you the 30 VHSs
you could buy if you had any.
So I used to just watch the demo video of it. And I used to watch this sort of like, you know, I don't know, like 90-second or 2-minute clip of Stu Hamm doing his thing. And
yes.
He had this beautiful blue Cubicki.
The like blue burst. Yeah.
It was amazing. And yes, I have a clip. I don't have the clip of Hot Licks. I did look for it. I couldn't find any on YouTube, but I've got a great clip of of Stu playing that Cubicki. So let me pull that up.
Stu has like such a remarkable sound and approach. Yeah. Oh yes, this is so cool.
Check it
out. Like on that Kubicki.
And he was playing this bass on that Hot Licks video. You can see it's got the blue outline and the black bit in the middle. Oh.
I mean, he was playing like Instagram guitar players before Instagram guitar players.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's so cool.
I think Stu Hamm needs more love, actually. I think he was a monster. Yeah. And he was doing stuff that nobody else was doing when he was doing it.
Yep.
A really fantastic friend of mine called Chris said he was at NAMM back in the day. And he said, and he heard somebody playing sort of like this. This country thing that he plays.
The like Linus and Lucy, like,
yeah.
Yes, for sure.
And he thought it was a guitar player. And he said he turned around and he said it was a bass player, like tapping it. And he'd never seen that before. He was people were just like all crowded round watching Stu Hamm do this thing. Because it was in a time that nobody had done anything like that. So I think that Stu needs a lot more love.
Man, and check this out. He was the first slap line that I ever learned too. I have a story of getting kicked out of my first teacher because, the carrot at the end of the stick was that he was going to show me Black Ice by Stu Hamm, and it was in drop D, and he showed it to me up here. But actually, Stu, on his Kubicki, used his drop D lever, and played it there. And it's such the Kubicki is such a strong flavor of a sound. You know, it's just absolutely sounds like the 80s, early 90s, like bass hero. It's so fun.
It's the best, isn't it? Ian Boltman, like I've got a Kubicki, Simon King is borrowed it from me to record. He actually borrowed it to record a course, dude. I haven't even told you the story behind it. He was recording a course for SBL and he was like, have you got a 4-string? That I could record this instantly.
Got the bass.
Hell yeah. I've got you. It's time to get this in an SBL course.
Yes.
So I sent it down to... Oh, no, he came up here and picked it up. So anyway, Simon got the Kubicki to record the course. Where was I going with this? You got me the Kubicki. So Ian bought me this Kubicki. You madman. And there was a point where we were in here, in this room I'm sitting in here, and we kind of like... We wanted to do like a Kubicki super group. where we're playing Kubickis and we only play slap. I still think that we should do that. Neon, we're probably wearing big ass 80s sunglasses.
Oakleys.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
Both with an audience Kubickis. with an audience of eight. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I think there's an audience. If you're watching us on YouTube, please let us know in the comments. Should we put together an 80s bass duo, neon design vibes? Like, just think Tron If yeah. Tron and Kubiki and Slap Bass all had a baby, I don't know, like, yeah, it's a trio, right? Menage a Trois, right? Yes. They all had a baby, right? And the band, the duo, there was that. Should we do it? Let us know in the comments. I'm all for it.
Oh, I am all for it too. Also, hey, let me just give a shout out to Kubiki too, because so many people think that they're defunct and not making instruments because Philip passed away. This bass has crazy history. It was the first custom shop product that Fender made. Fender bought Kubiki. Stu Hamm actually was instrumental in getting that, like making that deal happen between Kubiki and Fender. Yeah. So they made Factors as part of the custom shop. And then Philip got it back and then sadly passed away a few years after that. But they still, like Carla, who's the shop manager there, still takes orders. They have a bunch of new old stock around and they're not crazy money. Like I would think like a build like this now would be $8,000 and they're not that. So, you know, wow. If you want one of these, you can get the colors still pink, orange, you know, like yellow. They do this crazy yellow. Oh, I mean, maybe it's like banana base 2.0. I don't know. I'm just saying, it would be worth a look.
Could
like if
we
you
get
see this
matching Kubikis.
Yes.
Yes. Like we could. Can we just like contact Kubiki and we want to go full Tron? I don't know what that even looks like, but we're going to dress like Tron.
It could be that blue burst, man. I mean, that maybe, blue burst is sort of Tron vibes to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Anyhow, should
what's
we move
next,
on?
Divine?
So we've done the BB. Hey, yeah. And by the way, everybody, you know, for those of you who are listening, please go over to YouTube as well. This will be on the main channel, and let us know what your favorite 80s basses are. We know we are only focusing on the ones that we could show you on the video today. And just to put it aside as well, like we actually really love these basses. It's
totally.
And, you know, that's why we own them. But go over to YouTube. Let us know in the comments, what are your favorite 80s basses? It would be great to see everybody doing that because, you know, we're going to see the cross section of different, you know, what you guys are into. It'd be amazing to see that over on YouTube. So go let us know. Now, the next bass that we've got up. Ian's got his. I haven't got mine here today. I've done a bit of a lame job of bringing mine down, but Ian, I know that you know you might.
Got you, babe.
You've got me. You've got a few bases at home.
I got you, babe.
So the next one is Wall.
Oh, you mean?
You mean
a wall like this?
Yes, absolutely.
This is a Mark One from 1988 that I was able to purchase in London off an incredible guy named Pete, who had this bass since it was made. So it's a single owner with it's Wenge, right? So it's the Wenge front and back mahogany core, 1988. Yeah. And it's incredible.
Who are the Wall players? Like, and I've got two great clips to show you guys as well. In fact, let me share one and then I'll share the other in just a second.
Great.
But this first one is somebody that people kind of sleep on when it comes to not only bass playing.
But
also they sleep on him when it comes to playing not only walls, but playing bass as well. So check this out.
Come on.
Now, this obviously is different to yours. This is the Mark II wall, isn't
Mark
it?
Mark II. And is it a 5? It's a 5,
it
Scott.
It is a 5.
Jeez, dude. His bands have always been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Listen to this band.
So good. Just to tell you a quick story, when I first moved to Leeds, there was a great bass player called Rich Hammond that lives here there is another Rich Hammond that does Top Gear. And actually there's another Rich Hammond that does play bass in New York, but this is the Leeds Rich Hammond, who's a phenomenal player. I mean, I got a couple of lessons when I moved to Leeds with Rich. And he was into like Richard Bonner and Jaco and Lincoln Goines and like, you know, the obvious super bass players.
Yeah.
And he went to see Paul McCartney live. And I can remember meeting him the week after for a pint in town. And he said that that Paul McCartney was the best bass player he'd ever seen live.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool.
It was really interesting because he was into all of the uber bass players. And I was like, well, what was it about Paul McCartney? And he said his feel is just incredible.
Yeah, his time feel.
His time feel is incredible. Yeah. And it was really surprising. And after that, I kind of did a deep dive into Paul McCartney, you know, checked out his bass lines. We've done YouTube videos on him before. Yeah. He's so good. He's incredible.
He's incredible. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yes. I mean, you know, when he had that wall in that era. Yeah. Where this is a little too hot. The pickups on this thing are absolutely beastly.
That bass sounds incredible.
It really does. I mean, I'm going to just turn it down even a little more. Right? I mean, that sound, it's so... The wall players too. I mean, obviously there's Mick Karn. There's Percy Jones. We've talked about him. There's Geddy Lee.
Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Yeah. There's just something about these basses that they're immediate.
Justin Chancellor, like, Tool.
Like this. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Right. Like the, like. Yeah. There's something about the high end of them, you know, and when Geddy would play them too. And he would attack like that. They just have this like absolute immediate punch that comes right at you. And boy, it's really a cool bass to play. And do you have any more clips?
I've got one clip. I've got a clip of not of Mick Karn, actually. I was gonna show Mick Karn, but there's not that many great clips of him online, but I've got a great Percy Jones clip of him playing with Phil Collins, a little ditty about Phil Collins. I'll just share in a minute. But just to point it out as well, if you haven't seen a wall bass, the thing that makes them different.
Oh, right.
It's predominantly the pickups. It's the pickups and the circuitry. Obviously, huge, big pickups on that thing.
Yep.
And then the circuit is wacky.
Yeah.
It really takes some getting used to. Go for it.
Low pass filters instead of a tone control. So listen, you can remove all of the high end. And now it's just a submachine. If you pull up on the knob, it creates almost like a wah effect.
Yeah.
So you can get really kind of barky. As I'm just peaking everything because this bass is so hot, but the tone controls are just absolutely wild. You can blend that stuff, right? Right now I'm just on the bridge I'm on the bass pickup. So the neck pickup, they say B and T, it's like bass and treble.
Bass and treble, isn't it?
Right? Yeah. Just to show you that. I mean, what a wild sound that is.
Yeah, and they've got like pick attack where you can pull up on the tone, not the tone controls, but you can pull up on the controls and get a slight edge to it.
So check that out. Pull up on pick attack.
Right? It does exactly what he says on the tin.
Yep. It's mega. So cool.
Let me share this Percy Jones clip because it's super cool. And again, I wanted to share this one because a lot of people don't know that Phil Collins, before he was Phil Collins and before he was doing the whole Genesis thing, he was actually in the English version of, you know, Weather Report. It was called Brand X. It was, you know, I think that it was around the same time as Weather Report with Jaco and, you know, all of that scene that was going on. But instead of Jaco, they had Percy Jones, who was an absolutely phenomenal bass player. And he started out playing in Brand X with a wall Mark I. No, it's not a Mark One. What's it called?
I think it's a Pro. I believe it's a wall Pro. Yeah.
Check this out.
With that big pick guard on it.
And check out Phil Collins playing drums. It's awesome.
Singing too, man.
Oh yeah.
Come on.
Look how young he is.
Oh.
There's Percy. Playing fretless. This is in 79.
We were just but 1 year old, dude. Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
It's awesome, isn't it?
It's so cool. Yeah. And that Percy Jones thing, or like Mick Karn thing, it sounds like bridge pickup vibe to me.
Yeah. I think he only, does he only have one pickup on that bass?
Oh, does he?
Let me see.
Shoot, maybe. Yeah, could be.
Let me just see.
Let me share my screen.
I don't think there's any shots of him, actually. I don't think there's any shots of him. Maybe. Who knows? We'll never know. Or maybe we will know because somebody will tell us in the comments.
Yeah. There's just something about these. There's something about the bridge pickup. It's so, like, barky and cool.
Well, they're right back against the bridge as well.
Yeah.
You know, they're right back. If you look at, like, that on the BB, I would guess that that's in 70s position.
Right.
For the bridge. It looks further back to me than 60s.
Like, and this is, like, in...
Exactly.
This is an 80s position.
80s like, position, dude. Yeah, yeah, hammered right? against the bridge.
Yeah.
Now, segue. Let's do go. You know another bass that has the bridge pickup tight against the
well done.
Against the bridge?
Well done, Divine. I sure do. And I happen to have it right. Oh, God, dude. Right here. Oh, yes.
Outrageous.
Look at this thing.
Yeah.
Now, Ken Smith, man, this is a BT6 wide. I don't know why on earth I bought this instrument because the neck is like especially wide. like, but it is absolutely outrageous. Now, this is not one from the 80s. I have a four string from the 80s, but this four string Ken Smith from the 80s, but this one felt more apropos to the clip that Scott's going to show. This instrument is just wild. Big bass, a lot of wood going on here. It's hefty, and they have a very particular sound. You want to take us through it?
Yeah, and I think one of the things to point out about Ken Smith as well, especially in the 80s, is that they were just everywhere. They were so popular, especially in, you know, in the session world. I can remember having a conversation with Ricky Miner, who was, you know, like Ricky Miner, what did he do? American Idol, right? He was the MD for American Idol.
Yeah, and Whitney Houston.
But he was like the MD for Whitney Houston and this slew of artists. And I can remember having this conversation about Ken Smith, and he was saying, oh, it was the bass to use in, like, he said that you turn up to a studio and they expected you to have a Ken Smith.
Right.
Almost like what we talk about that with P basses now, but back in the 80s, it was Smith.
Because P basses weren't cool. You know, like there was a time where it was like, oh, that's that old thing, and we want something bright and modern. Yeah. And
we
that
want something
was
to cut through the mix.
That was this sound. Right? That was like
exactly that.
Hold on. I'm getting there.
When I was hanging with Ricky Miner, I got to play the bass that he played on I Will Always Love You. Do you know, I Will Always Love You? Is that the tune? The Whitney Houston tune?
Yeah.
I played the bass, dude. It was wild.
Oh,
that
I
bass
bet.
Is amazing. And you know what Smiths are like? I think that might have been the first Smith that I ever played. They're like pianos. Like
yes, they are.
You play it and it's like, whoa. Even like Alan that's here. Hey, Alan, over there behind the camera. We used to have this like blackout curtain in the studio, and he was on one side and I was on the other side of this blackout curtain, and I just got a Smith. I plugged it in, and you know, I'd played a bunch of basses in front of Alan. He never mentioned any of them. He was like, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah,
Alan
like,
plays drums. And he's like, loser, I play drums. Anyway, yeah, right, so I plugged this Ken Smith in and I played it, and I can remember Alan was on the other side, and he was like, oh, what's that? What bass are you playing? It instantly stands out. They have a really certain sound about them. So
they
not
do.
Only that, not only was everybody, you know, a lot of people using them in the 80s, but also Ken Smith was a pioneer of the modern electric bass. There's so many things that he did that we take for granted right now, like quick release bridge, you know, the quick release strings from a bridge. He did that, you know, detented, you know, the detented controls.
Let's get a little detent ASMR. You ready?
Exactly. You've got that little notch in the middle of the control.
Yes.
I think that he did the first onboard active electronics that were actually in the bass. There's a slew of other things as well. Oh, do you know the inlaid strap strap buttons?
Here.
Yeah, yep. Ken Smith. So there's
did he also do the brass nut, or was that before? Did he do the brass nut?
Oh, maybe he could have done the brass nut, but I'll tell you what he did do. He was the first person that made a wide neck six string.
Oh, like this?
Exactly like that. There was no wide neck six string before Ken Smith. And it was originally designed with Anthony Jackson. I think the story goes that Anthony Jackson did something with Carl Thompson beforehand, which was a thinner neck, so the strings were closer together. And then he teamed up with Ken Smith afterwards, and they created the first wide neck six string, just like the one that you're holding today. Except I think that Anthony's one had a pick guard on it. In fact, I've got a clip of him playing the bass.
Let's go. Oh,
let
fun.
Let me share the screen, dude. This is with Aldi Meola in 1982. Boom. Gad on drums.
Oh, jeez. Whoa! Woo! Jeez. Dude, okay, hold on. Outrageous. Hold on. Good Christ. I mean, I think that, like, first of all, Anthony Jackson might be the only bass player alive that is like that ferocious seated. Do you know what I'm saying?
He's
like
always sat down.
Yes.
Always.
Yes. So many clips I see. Well, maybe because that's how he did it live. He is seated, but like the fire, right? And the tenacity that comes out of his playing. Like he's not jumping around, moving around stage. It just is all, you can see it in his face and in his body language, even when he sat down.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. It's very cool.
Do you know if he did the, do you know What You're Gonna Do For Me, Chaka Khan? Mm-hmm. Do you know if he did that on the Ken Smith, or did he do it on the Carrigo?
I don't. You are the resident Anthony Jackson
fan. I knew this at one point. I think he did it on Carrigo, but Carrigo was his original. It was a jazz bass with a precision neck.
That's right.
I think he did it on that, but in a different tuning. Please, somebody let me know if I'm right in the comments. I've done so many videos and so many of these weird facts that they all just get mixed up into a big soup. I don't know. If anybody's there, like, Scott, you talked about this in a YouTube video. How do you not know? It's just because I've talked about so many things. Either that or my brain's just crap. Yeah, I think he did it on Career Girl. And then what's the OJs as well? I wonder if he...
Yeah.
I think that was on Career
That was Career Girl. Yeah, that wasn't a Ken Smith. That was pre-Ken Smith. But the thing I just wanted to... Because I have one here. Like, that Anthony Jackson thing, he's playing with a pick on that clip. And it sounds like he's got chorus on, right? And the cool thing... The cool thing about a Ken Smith is all the way from down low. Like that's a 3-octave major scale, and every note, right? Right? Like every note is so clear. It's just absolutely crazy. Oh, what do we, we texting some folks now? We just doing a little bit of work. Just doing a little.
Yeah.
Just getting a little work done, dude.
Yeah, dude. I'm just like DM some dudes. No, I'm just actually texting some saying, hey, I'm running late. We're talking bases. I'm running late.
I mean, just the clarity on these, like, you know, and I won't do it with, you know, chorus or pick, right? So check this out. Even if I'll go bridge pickup. Come on, Allison, where is it? Right, bridge pickup, down low. Listen to that sound. It's like, gow.
Crazy.
Yeah, and as you climb, right? All these notes sound the same. Like, there's the same amount of volume at that C. As this C. It's really, really cool. Anyway, that's what I think is really special about these. Like, then, you know, if you play chords on them, right? They're just like, God, they just ring like pianos. It's wild.
So really cool. Good.
Yeah.
Hang on. I'm going off script.
You're going off script?
We didn't have a script. Let me just see if...
The Cocteau Twins, please welcome Massive Attack.
Oh, dude, yes. Thank you for finding this. Turn it down a little.
I think this is Winston Blissett.
Dude, I think he's playing his Smith. This. He is. I can see it. Was that him on bass just there?
Yeah, dude.
That
No, I don't think so. Oh, maybe.
Okay. Was that like in a track or something? Oh.
Listen to the clarity.
Oh. Oh, there it is. Look at that.
Yeah. For me, that had to be done on a Smith. It's just, there's something about that track that when I hear it, it just screams Ken Smith to me.
Oh, yes.
So good. Right. And can we just have a bit of love for that track as well? Oh, my word.
Wow. Is it like...
outrageous. Yes. Exactly that.
Oh, yeah. It's so interesting. Like, if you just back off towards the bridge a touch, right? Maybe just then bump the bass to compensate. Like, you just hear that low C. It's so clean.
Yeah.
But you have often said, too, that they also, like, there is this character in, like, the high mid-range or high-end that starts to grate on you over time.
Yeah, right? It does for me sometimes, yeah. Like, it's like a fretless. You know, you can OD on a fretless sometimes, and you're just a bit I'm a bit done with the fretless sound. At least me, right? And I find that the same thing with the Ken Smith. Sometimes I'm like, you know, when you hear it in a mix, it's really great. But sometimes when I'm playing it, I just like OD on the Ken Smith. I need a break or whatever. Yeah. I would love to fix that. I would love to fix that because I've got a beautiful Ken Smith at home. It's definitely a bass I geek out on way too much on reverb. It's one of the top searches. I'm always searching for Smiths. There's something about them that I think that... I'll tell you what, do you know when I see a video and it's like, there's a bunch of them on YouTube, whatever, versus Ken Smith, right? But for me, every time I listen to it, I'm like, oh, Ken Smith wins. And you look in the comments, always the same story. Always.
Really?
It's interesting. Yeah. There's something about the way that it cuts in the mix. But that clip, I'm not sure I mentioned it, is Winston Blissett on bass with Massive Attack there. He is a UK legend. Just a fantastic bassist. And he's played with a bunch of artists as well. But like, I love it.
Glad you pulled that up. Because, you know, you always associate the Ken Smith with Anthony Jackson, with, you know, Patitucci, Ricky Minor, like session, clean, R&B, jazz. But to see it in that context of like Massive Attack, what is that called? Is that genre called like trip hop? What's Massive Attack?
I don't know. What do you think, Alan? Music? Massive Attack? It's sort of like, it's out of Bristol, isn't it? There was a whole scene that came out of Bristol and around that. I'm not sure what it's called. Massive Attack. Somebody will know. I'll see it and I'll be like, oh, that was obvious. It was that thing. The Bristol sound. I'll call it that.
Well, it's cool to see that, like, that bass show up. I love seeing stuff that feel like a little bit of a cognitive dissonance. Like, you'd think maybe that guy would be playing, I don't know, anything other than a Smith. Yeah. But it had such a, what a vibe, you know?
Instead of getting it with pedals
or instead of it as synth bass, that the Smith almost sort of just sounds like a synth bass.
It's weird, isn't it? You know, it really sounds so good.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, so cool. Check it out. This is one for you.
Let's go. Thank you, Divine. I mean, you made me try to get this sound without a Spectre. On that video, that SBL video.
Just
Alice
classic,
in Chains.
Classic.
The great Mike Starr, RIP. Man, playing an NS2, like a Kramer era 80s NS2. Keep it going.
Go one more time, dude. Yeah, let's have that.
Yeah.
The listen front end on that note. You just know that he's got that thing that's slung low because he's got the attack against the pick against the strings. Just sounds beautiful.
And if I pull this up, you know, no amp emulation, nothing. Oh, it's too loud, Allison. Come on.
So what is that? Is he playing a four string? Is it five string?
Sorry.
Is it detuned or what's going on there?
Okay, great call. What he's playing is an NS2 from the probably the mid to late 80s when they were made by Kramer. Stuart Spector sold the license to Kramer. They made them. That is sort of a golden era. The Brooklyn era, the early 80s stuff that Stuart made, and then the mid to late 80s stuff is considered like some of the golden era Spector. Here's the deal. That cool curved body that Ned Steinberger helped out with.
Yeah.
And then you've got reverse P pickup, PJ EMGs that are connected to this really cool preamp called a Haz. Right now, this is not an 80s one. This one was made after Stuart got his name back. This was made in 2013. So this is 11 years old. But the cool thing about these basses is just blended in the center, they don't sound like a typical, PJ. They have a huge, powerful sound.
It's crazy.
That's like overloading my stuff. Hold on. Let me see if I can. There we go. He's a half step down, so I did that too. But there's something about the of that, right? That's not typical PJ.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, and you've talked about this before. Like, the thing with Mike Starr is the scrape.
Yeah.
And you can boost bass and treble.
Dude,
actually, that might be closer.
That tone for me is that's the PJ. You know, if somebody was like, well, there's lots of different PJ tone, like different play, like, you know, like Victor Wooten plays a PJ.
Right.
But when I listen to a PJ, I'm sorry, all PJ players, I'm always like, eh.
When
both pickups are on, I'm always like, it's not as good as a jazz bass with both pickups on.
I agree.
And I know that they do different things. With a PJ, you can get a P bass sound, great. You can get a bridge sound like on a jazz, great. But you can't get the jazz sound. And I just A-B them. I prefer the jazz bass, both pickups on, versus the PJ, both pickups on, except for this. Like that sound is like, it's like iconic.
It is iconic. And we've heard it a million places. And I had too many Spector references for today. But another one to just show you, and people don't associate this with Flea, but Flea played. Like he played, that's a half step too low, but he played Higher Ground on a Spector. And it's just, it just makes you want to like hit it. You know what I mean? Like that sound just makes you want to. So gonky and cool. I love it. I love it a lot.
There's just something really interesting about the mid range, isn't there? It's like the mid and the top have this sort of like super unique character.
Yeah.
Damn, I love it.
I know. Me too. Do you have another clip in there for me? Or
I was pausing. I was pausing because I was wondering, you know, are we going to go there? We can go there. Check it out. So this is our last clip of the day.
And, thank you for showing this.
Yeah. And we're going to go with, a beautiful man.
Oh yeah.
We were watching this earlier. We should have been like listening to his bass playing, but we're like, God damn, this guy's sexy.
Oh, I mean, this made everybody want to do a lot of things. One of those things is buy an NS2. But there were other things too.
Was this something to do with the, was it something to do with Flash Gordon? Because he looked
like his outfit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you watched Flash Gordon?
Yes, absolutely. He does have a Flash Gordon vibe. Oh, look at this guy. Come on. Listen to that bass. Spector NS2. Come on. Dude.
It's so good, isn't it?
It's so good.
You can hear that mid-content there as
you
well.
You can. EMGs. Yeah, I loved all that stuff.
Love it.
Oh my god. And it's funny, man. I was talking to the guys at Spectre. And they would love to get another Spectre in his hands. I think he only played that NS2 on that tour, but that right there is my favorite Sting bass tone of all time. I mean, yeah. I love Fender. Hey, do I love it? I do. I'm a Fender fanboy, but my favorite sound that Sting has ever had is that sound. I think it's the most iconic. I think it sounds so cool on that Police material, and I wish he'd play a Spectre again.
Yeah. See, if you're listening, Mr. Sting, yeah. Pop out Sting. The PJ, dude. Pop out the Spectre.
Let's
We're
go.
Here for it. The bass community is here for you.
We have to hear it. We want it back. Yeah.
It'd be amazing. Okay, dude, let's call it. It's been
amazing.
Great. Yeah, what if you're here at the end of the video, thank you so much. You get the true bass geek badge if you made it to the end of this one. We'll send
right.
it to you in the post. We freaking appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening to these videos. We're going to be doing way more. We're going to be putting them on the main channel as well, the main YouTube channel. So definitely go start checking them out over there. And yeah, and we'll catch you in the next one. And make sure you leave a comment as well down below. If you've loved this, you know, this format here where we're just, you know, geeking out over basses, let us know. Do you want like one on the 90s basses, 70s basses?
Oh, wow. Fun.
I don't know, basses of the 2000s. Like, let us know your ideas down below. Then we can go through them comments and we can make that content for you. Have you got anything to leave with Ian?
Hey, hit us with a rating. Yeah. Leave a comment. Like and subscribe. That's all I got. I just want to go play this bass some more. So we'll see you in the next one, everybody.
Awesome, dudes. Take it easy. Bye.